and welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. My name is Ben Groves.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show. A movie podcast / mental health check-in for two broken-brained best friends laughing the pain away with film. But given that this is a mental health check-in, Ben, before I get to what we're doing, how are we doing? How is this film relevant to your week?
I'm tired, but I'm good.
You're good.
Going through some stuff right now. There's some big changes, you know, the death of the ego type stuff. There's other people involved. So out of respect for those people and the situation, I won't be going into detail. But this film helped me this week because it's a healing experience.
Mm.
Sometimes I get a little bit like a blocked pipe, like an emotionally blocked pipe, right? And I struggle to sort of...
I've seen those videos.
I struggle to process sometimes, right? And there's a little bit of like an emotional spectrum struggle.
Yeah, you're quite autistic about stuff.
Yeah. About stuff. Quite autistic's just, fine.
Yeah, quite autistic. You're quite autistic about stuff. It's fine. I'm quite ADHD. You're quite autistic. It's
a good balance. This film is like emotion by proxy for me.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what mood I'm in or what's happening. I cannot watch the parts of this film without just breaking down, just fully breaking down. And it's helped me immensely this week. Helped me get through a lot of stuff. And I'm feeling, like I said, tired, but good.
Oh,
like
good.
A new leaf is being turned.
Nice. Yeah.
I tried chicken for the first time in 6 years.
Oh, yes, you did.
As an experiment the other day. That was interesting.
How'd you find it?
It was probably the best thing I've eaten in like 6 years.
Wow. Okay, yeah.
We saved a dog.
You saved a dog, yeah.
The boys' night, me and the boys, we found a little tiny lost dog and then we got the dog warden out. We named her Linda. She works in HR. She is a lesbian.
That's quite a lot of backstory for a dog you had in your life for how long?
Well, you gave us a better reaction than the dog warden did because he was very much like, I just need information for paperwork. I don't need where she works. And it's like,
right, okay.
But it is an accounting firm.
Yeah, I'm invested in the backstory. I feel like there's a lot of it for such a short movie. But yeah, okay. Nice.
Yeah, it was great. How about you, man? How are you? How did this film help you?
I feel like I've got nothing going on. Compared to that, you've tried chicken for the first time in 6 years. You've saved a dog. Mm-hmm. You've gone through a major life change.
Yeah.
You've got a film that's making you emotional by proxy.
Yeah.
I've been following Drake Kendrick beef. And I'll tell you the most exciting thing. Tell you the most exciting thing that happened in my life. It wasn't that, because this is movies, not music.
Go on.
I fully destroyed my day because I made the mistake of somebody at work went to Tesco's. And I said, I'll get a double decker, which for our American friends is like a nougat heavy with toffee.
Crunchy. What?
Nougat. I don't know how to fucking say it. I've only ever read it.
To be fair, right?
Is it nougat?
I was just about to say nugget.
It's not nugget.
But now I'm thinking I've
never
heard it.
It's definitely not nugget.
I've not heard it out loud either. I don't know how to pronounce it. Nougat.
Nougat, I think, right? It's one of those. And I was like, it's a hot day. I'm going to put this up in the fridge. And I put it in the fridge. And after work, I was packing away, putting all the food from the top of the kitchen counter into the fridges. I'm like, oh, my double-decker bar, my nougat nugget bar. Incredible.
My nougat nugget bar. Yeah, buddy.
Mate, if I tell you this, it pushed my gum line to my fucking eyes. This thing was a brick. And all I'm saying is, if like me, you are incredibly poor, I've got a way to make chocolate last a fucking week.
Yeah, good. Good.
I've not got a single filling left in my fucking mouth. That has been the extent of the excitement on my end, buddy.
I love it. I'm actually genuinely really fucking happy that you're having sort of like very stable, very mundane, very normal weeks.
Oh my God,
in comparison
right?
to how it's been recently. This is good. This is good.
There's nothing like an internal house fire to make boredom seem so delicious.
Oh, mate, 1,000%. I'm aiming for the mundane right now. I'm aiming for it. It's within reach. I can see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can see it's not that far away and it looks beige. That's all I'm saying, buddy. Cannot fucking wait. Today, buddy, we are doing Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Whoop, whoop.
It's the fourth film of the franchise, but thankfully the third canonically. Is this the best Ghostbusters sequel so far?
Yes.
This
is, thanks for joining us.
Oh.
Because that's why we're doing this series, to find out why the original Ghostbusters is so hard to sequel. Many, many attempts. None of them have really lived up to it. But is this the best one so far? Right. In this episode, we're going to be getting into...
how this film came to be, and is this the best sequel?
The use of Harold Ramis after his death, and how Satan set up his... what the fuck? Hold on. This is a new one.
What?
The use of Harold Ramis after his death, and how Satan set up his demon naming schemes.
It's a very important point, Ben, and it's something that I don't feel that we can cover Ghostbusters fairly without getting into. But we'll get into that later. Tell me the juice.
Right. This movie came out in 2021, obviously post-COVID. The whole world fucking ground to a halt for a little while there. So this came out after that. $75 million budget. Turned it into $204 million in a post-COVID theatre screen. That's pretty fucking good.
That's incredible. That's way, way better than I thought this. Given the sort of muted reaction to Ghostbusters as a franchise today, I would have said that this is a runaway hit. But people don't talk about this film like it's a hit. They're like, oh, I think I saw it.
So there's two schools on this film. I will touch on them both very, very briefly.
Don't be touching schools.
Good point. I'm not Drake. There are two schools of thought.
There we go.
I will mention both schools of thought briefly.
Nice.
And reveal which one I subscribe to, because it's painfully obvious. But what this film means to me, this is the closure / extended universe that I sorely needed as a fan of the originals.
Mm-hmm.
It is carrying the flame whilst simultaneously passing the torch to the next generation. It does it in a respectful way, it does it in a loving way, and it does it in a fucking beautifully heartbreaking way. All of which we're going to be getting into.
It's interesting because I my point that I'm going to get into later is that I'm not sure this is a Ghostbusters film.
Interesting.
I love the film, but I'm not sure it's a Ghostbusters film.
Okay.
For the benefit of those that haven't seen it recently and want a refresher, or have never seen it and are never planning to, we're just going to break down the movie. We've kept Act 3 a little vaguer, just in case during the course of the episode you're like, do you know what? Now I am interested. But there will be spoilers. So if you're sensitive about that kind of thing...
grow up.
Here's your chance.
Okay, oh, no, yeah, sorry. Yeah, here's your chance. Yeah, yeah. Do something responsible.
Shall I hit the theme button?
Do it. Oh, is this the fucking jingle that you used last week? The exact same thing?
I changed it.
How? It's a bit shorter.
Yeah, firstly, so I cut off all the front bit.
Yeah.
All the vulnerability, that's gone.
Sure. Right?
Or most of it. And then there's like a ride symbol in it now. It's much jazzier. Like, it's totally different. Yeah.
No, my bad. The ride symbol makes it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, no, my bad. It is wildly different.
Oh, as a drummer, you're going to tell me a ride symbol doesn't make a difference?
Not unless you're beating the fuck out of it, not some little ping, pa ping, pa ping, pa ping.
All right, cool. I'll turn it up.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah, cool.
Just think I'm... I had a bit of breakdown. Come on, it's...
The story begins with single mother Callie and her two children, Phoebe and Trevor, moving to a small town in Oklahoma after inheriting a property from their late grandfather, Dr. Egon Spengler. Phoebe and Trevor discover their grandfather's old Ghostbusting equipment and learn about his past as one of the original Ghostbusters. They also uncover a hidden underground lab where Egon had been conducting research.
As the family settles in, they begin experiencing strange paranormal activities in the town, including earthquakes and mysterious sightings.
Ooh.
Phoebe's fascination... Wow. Shut up. Phoebe's fascination with science leads her to investigate further. Phoebe and Trevor... befriend Mr. Gruberson, a local who shares stories about the Ghostbusters' past exploits and helps them understand the significance of the grandfather's work.
Through their investigations, Phoebe and Trevor learn that the town is haunted by the spirit of Gozer the Gozerian, who was
Gozer.
I mean, you're still very good at that.
Thanks, man.
Who was previously defeated by the original Ghostbusters. They realize that Egon had been trying to prevent Gozer's return. With the help of Mr. Gruberson and a new friend named Podcast, Phoebe and Trevor decide to follow in their grandfather's footsteps and become Ghostbusters themselves. They also receive assistance from Egon's former colleagues, including Peter Venkman, Ray Stans, and Winston Zeddemore.
Oh, I love it. Will our intrepid heroes, new and old, prevail? Will Gozer be finally defeated? And can Ben get through this episode without crying? The answer to that, buddy, is yes, yes, no. So just to be clear, I'm mad sensitive at the minute.
Yeah.
Massively on the delicate side. I've done shitloads of research. I've put my heart and soul into this. I might need you to step in and take over some of the reading of the research.
Right, I was going to say, because for the benefit of those at home, right, we normally have like a little structure document where we just put the headlines of what we want to talk about, and then we go from there. So basically, it stops one of us going off down a rabbit hole for too long.
All right, masked magician, let's not tell him all the fucking tricks, all right?
Jesus. So I'm used to a certain amount of text on the screen, right? But this is like a fucking book, Ben.
I got carried away, man.
Like, you've gone...
I'm a little delicate, and you asked interesting questions that I was just sort of like, you know what?
Right.
I can go ham on this.
So obviously, we've covered every film in this franchise up to this point earlier in the month. So we did Ghostbusters 1 a couple of weeks ago. Great film, comedy classic. We loved it.
Mm.
Ghostbusters 2, you loved it because it was more of the thing you love, but you admitted it had problems. And for me...
Yeah.
It's a good film, but it's disappointing when it's sort of... put next to Ghostbusters 1.
Of course. It's always going to pale in comparison. Yeah. Always.
Ghostbusters 2016, we tried to be kind and find things we liked, but I think we can all agree it's a relatively bad film.
Shite.
Fans of that film are few and far between.
Shite.
And then there's a big old gap. There's a big old gap between movies, and then suddenly this one comes along. So how did this film, like last episode on Ghostbusters, I said, how the fuck did this happen?
Yeah.
Now after a big old shit in the soup like Ghostbusters 2016.
Yeah.
How are we on a second course of this same restaurant? Right.
Okay. This is a lengthy answer. I'm going to try and keep it as brief as possible, but I'm going to get into it. Jason Reitman and Gil Keenan, or Jill Keenan? Gil Keenan.
Gil. It's Gil a man, Keenan. So let's go Gil.
We'll go Gil. So Jason Reitman and Gil Keenan wrote a script after Ghostbusters 3 was a fucking write-off and never being made. Stuck in production hell. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
They decided to center it around family, which is a good move. Jason Reitman sees his dad as an amalgamation of all of the OG Ghostbusters put together and also one of the creative minds being behind its inception, right?
Right. I mean, which is not incorrect because he is.
He's responsible for this franchise. If we're thanking anyone, we're thanking Ivan.
Right, exactly.
Like that's like Aykroyd and Ramis, they wrote it. They worked their fucking asses off on it. Obviously, the cast and the crew, they brought it all together. But Ivan is the man that made magic happen and gave us all a fucking childhood. Yeah. You know what I mean?
100%.
Ivan had always wanted to pass the torch to Jason, but Jason wanted to go out on his own and sort of prove himself as a filmmaker first. He had earned himself 4 Oscar nominations with Juno and Up in the Air by the age of 32.
All right, dickhead.
I'm going to put that into... I'm going to say that again, right?
Chill out.
At the age of 32, Jason Reitman had 4 Oscar nominations for 2 films.
Yeah, but his dad did write Ghostbusters, so do you know what I mean? Easier to get that meeting. You can go, I've got an idea about a teen pregnancy comedy. And they're like,
maybe.
Now we're all right. Oh, by the way, my dad wrote Ghostbusters. Here's $500,000. Just go make that movie.
Yeah, take 50 mil. Take it. Do you know Michael Cera? I'll fucking get him in it if you need him.
Everyone knows Michael Cera.
Working with Ivan as a producer on Afterlife, the torch was being passed from old to new, OG to fresh blood.
Yeah, I can see that.
Right?
Yeah.
And that is exactly what this film is doing. I'm not going to lie. This film is packed to the fucking rafters
right,
with fan service. I'm not going to say that's a good thing.
I think it kind of is. I think it's done correctly.
Exactly. It's a healing fan service.
It's in the back of a shot.
Yes.
It's not somebody going up and going, my catchphrase, and then walking out of shot.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not like, oh, I've been slimed, and then Pete Ventman sort of moonwalks back to the fridge. Do you know what right. I mean? It's not like a fucking... it's not anything. I think it's done well. It's done in a way that is almost to maybe not apologize, because I don't think Jason's trying to apologize for 2016, because he says that he's a fan of it and he's interested to see what Paul Feig would do with his Ghostbusters universe. I think what he's done is he's gone, the original fans aren't big into it, and I think it's because it's too sharp of a left turn away from what they love. So I'm going to make a film that gives them what they love in a new and exciting way, whilst passing the flame from old to new, sort of breathing a little bit of new life into the franchise, right?
Yeah, it's like if Ghostbusters is the bun, and then Paul Feig came along and served me chocolate mousse, and I'm like, that's not a burger.
No.
And he's like, oh, it's a left turn though, isn't it? I'm like,
yes, it is.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be in this bun. It should be in its own, but it should be in its own plate. It doesn't need, yeah, doesn't need the Ghostbusters logo on a bit of bread.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, like we said last week, we covered Ghostbusters. It's fine. It just shouldn't be a Ghostbusters
yeah,
film.
Yeah, that's exactly and what it is.
And then it would be a forgettable comedy.
It's a hilarious SNL film. It's a shit Ghostbusters film.
I can see why Jason doesn't want to shit on the movie.
So I think what he was doing is he was trying to sort of ease the pain, heal some of the wounds of the original fans from 2016's fucking womp womp sound effect. You know what I mean? A lot of fans love this film for what it is, an homage to the original made with respect, courtesy, that not only upholds the tone, the pacing, the mystery, the comedy, the fucking great subtle character development. Admittedly.
Right.
It's not as smart as the original Ghostbusters.
Do you not think?
I don't think it's as clever as the original Ghostbusters. I don't.
Do you know what the original Ghostbusters has? Is it has what I call the kind of SNL-itis, which is the sort of knowing wink to camera.
But that's what makes it great, because you're in on it. Yeah.
That's what you love. You love that.
Exactly.
Whereas for me, I like this one because it doesn't have the kind of, we're doing a comedy
okay
tone to it. It feels a little bit more human. It feels a little bit more like,
yeah,
an other film where people are people.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, like, nothing Bill Murray does would fly in real life.
No. That man would be arrested immediately.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, he would be inundated with restraining orders almost immediately.
Like, I feel like the original Ghostbusters, and I don't mean this to be hurtful. I genuinely, this is sincere. I sincerely don't mean this to be hurtful. But I feel like all the original Ghostbusters communicate like autistic kids. So I can see why you relate to them.
Yeah. But that's right? The point.
But
though,
if you were to have them in the room with you, you'd be like, oh my God, they are severely disabled.
But it's more like... I did not expect that to go there. All right, Paul Feig, throw it in the fucking left turns. You want to calm down with your chocolate mousse.
Ironically, I think they'd love that.
1,000% that's edited out.
Yeah.
1,000%.
You're right. That's a good turn.
No, I think it's close. Yeah. I like Ivan's way of having you be part of the humor rather than have the humor being fed to you. There's a very different approach to comedies from the 80s to the 2020s.
Yeah. Comedic 2020s tone shifted.
Is like someone screaming at you going, look how fucking funny this is. And in the 80s, it was like, hey, buddy, want to see something funny? Do you know what I mean?
But in a weird way, you know how you don't like slapstick?
Yes.
Because it's like someone walks onto camera and then they see that there's a plank and then they look at the camera and they juggle their eyebrows and then they look back at the plank.
Yeah.
There's a dating to that kind of comedy, and I think the Ghostbusters, original Ghostbusters, is incredible. It's incredibly smartly written.
Yeah.
And it's an incredible 80s style comedy.
Yeah.
And I prefer the contemporary style, but that's just personal preference.
So to sum up the answer to that question, I'd say that this film, it's Jason's way of easing the wounds for OG fans.
Mm-hmm.
It shows Jason's feelings towards his father and how much he respects his work, wanting to take it on finally, but do something big with it in a respectful way, giving it his own edge, right?
Right, of course.
And I think what that means to big Ghostbusters fans is that someone that genuinely has a vested interest in the franchise is finally taking charge and going, just let me cook. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is it. We've just sort of all sat down and been sort of like, oh, here we fucking go again. But he's actually whipped up like a semi fucking decent.
You know, when we were covering Ghostbusters 1 and you said one of the things you love about it is that the position that the characters find themselves in,
yeah,
is very much the position that the writers are in. You know, that the characters in Ghostbusters 1 are plucky upstarts, kind of fighting to get their point of view out there and be recognized for their triumphs, right?
Yeah.
I feel like this is exactly the same. It's the son of an original writer going,
yeah,
well, I've got to take this torch now and it's kind of on my shoulders. But there's guys that came before me that did it incredibly well. And I've now got to stay.
Yeah.
So it's exactly in simpatico. The writer, again, is going through what the characters in the film are going through. So they're kind of writing from experience, right? my older male relative.
Yeah, he's also being quietly guided by Ivan throughout the thing. An unseen force is guiding him through the universe and giving him little notes and pointers here and there.
Right.
Much like Egon Spengler does to Phoebe throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
Everything in this is so fucking synchronized and in unison. It's a beautiful thing to watch.
I love Ghostbusters 2, but this is a better sequel than Ghostbusters 2.
Personally, this is the best sequel so far. This is the best sequel that we've got to the original Ghostbusters so far. But obviously, by a fucking mile.
Yeah, right? I mean, Frozen Empire we've still to cover, so you know, you never know.
Let's not bring but that Ben, up right now. It's fine.
Okay.
It's fine. We'll get into that in a couple of weeks. I'm still a little raw
I'm just,
on it.
I'm just saying, there's it's all to play for, mate. We don't know. This could not be the best it gets.
Yeah, we all do though, but it's fine. Afterlife, the character development in Afterlife is great. It's so subtle and it's so realistic, right? No one suddenly becomes a big action hero. Everyone is shit in their pants, scared because they don't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
The only reason that Phoebe holds it together in the face of being led around the house by a ghost and a fucking PKE meter is her scientific mind, which is she gives us the information very early on that she doesn't process emotions the same
way.
She's
autistic, Ben.
She was autistic. I've never related to a character more in my life. She's like, I don't process emotions the same as other people. On the inside, I'm dying. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's almost like there's a theme for the franchises you enjoy, but okay.
But the character development is great. I love the mom's role. Mm. I love her character going from, oh, my dad left me. He didn't care about the family. He's either a piece of shit or an asshole, right?
Yeah.
And that was it. She was bought into that. She was fully settled into that. And then even she has the inquisitive mind to be led down to the fucking fire pole,
well,
be shown her entire history that was being tracked by her recently deceased father.
Well, something this film does really well, which 2016 totally failed to do, is each character that is shown on camera and given dialogue is given something to do with their time on camera and their dialogue. They each individually have an arc and they're each individually respected by the writer.
Yeah.
And if they don't have something to do or something to learn or something to be getting on with, they're not fucking in the film.
Yeah, they just shut the fuck up.
There are very, very few characters. There's the police chief in this, right? Very tiny sort of cameo character. He comes on, he provides the necessary resistance to the main characters and he steps away.
Yes.
He doesn't have a million and one zingy one-liners.
Nope.
He's literally just there to be set dressing.
Yeah.
Everyone else in this film, the mum, she's got her own arc.
Yes.
Paul Rudd's Gruberson, he's got an arc.
Yes.
It's a true ensemble film.
Yes.
Where everybody's doing something and it may not be all as a group.
Yeah.
But by the end of the film, you feel like every character that was on the poster had a story.
Yes.
Whereas I cannot tell you what the fuck Kate McKinnon did or learned in 2016.
There was no reason for any of it.
No.
She was just there to make bear traps that were never used in the film.
Yeah.
It was like, I've made a laser bear trap. Let's never use this. It's like, fine.
Right.
That's a great character arc. Good job.
It's like a joke delivery pachinko machine where like they just roll the wheel.
That's exactly it.
And they go, and this joke goes to Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah.
And this one goes to Kristen Wiig. And you're like,
yes.
But what is happening?
Yes. Who is saying what and why? I don't get this fucking thing. I don't get it. But my favorite element of this film is it's not specifically a Ghostbusters story.
No.
This is a side quest from the main quest. This is a look at what could happen to the Ghostbusters family of a truly dedicated, passionate, unwavering Ghostbuster, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it shows the effect that the Ghostbusters lifestyle had on his family, on his friends, on normal people around him. And ultimately, it shows the dynamic. This is setting me off already.
Oh.
Hold on one sec. One sec. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. One sec. It shows the dynamic of what could happen and the choices you're forced to make as a person on a mission who solely believes that they're doing the right thing. Do you do the right thing because it's the right thing, but it's going to hurt people around you? Or do you save the people around you by doing, by not doing the right thing that you believe in and sacrificing that end? And it's a fucking painful, painful view at both of those outcomes, man. It's beautiful. But fuck me, Ghostbusters, mate. This is a Ghostbusters film. And that's the fucking story they went with. They were like, yeah, let's just show like an abandoned, bitter daughter who believes, genuinely in her heart and soul, believes that her dad was a cock.
Well, this is why I would disagree that this is a Ghostbusters movie.
Okay.
Obviously, it's a fucking Ghostbusters movie.
Go on.
In title and in intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
But the tone that it's evoking is a million miles away from Ghostbusters 1 for me. Ghostbusters 1 is a smart Saturday Night Live 80s era.
Definitely.
Witty one-liners, slightly cutting.
Yeah.
It's not earnest at all. There's absolutely no sincerity in Ghostbusters 1. It's a sly, sarcastic.
I think there's some. The entirety of Venkman is exactly what you've just described. But Egon Spengler in the first one, nothing but sincere.
Yeah, but he's in like 10% of the film. Like, you've got to admit that like Venkman gets a large amount.
Sigourney Weaver's dead set.
She's still got that kind of sly, knowing...
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm with you. Okay.
Where is this film? It's a 1980s Spielberg movie.
It is.
It's E.T.
It is.
It's Close Encounters. It's The Goonies.
It is.
That's what I get from this movie. And it's so much better because, I mean, if this had been in New York, it wouldn't have worked for a start. It's a small town creature feature.
Family focused. Has to be a small town family focus. Has to be small town.
Yeah. Oh, shucks, I don't want to move to the country. Oh, it's fine. You'll make some new friends. Oh, there's a treasure. We'll go on an adventure.
Exactly.
Like the fact that they do not find themselves at some point on an inflatable raft about to go off a waterfall is a miracle.
Right? You're going to come home with me now
yeah.
to Muncher.
Just yeah, literally right, like. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, that is what I would say to anyone called Muncher.
Yeah.
If I met someone and she was like, my name's Muncher, I'm like, you're going to come home with me now.
Oh. I see. I picked up on that reference, see? I'm there. That brought me out of my emotions a little bit. That was nice, thank you.
Good.
I think my favorite thing about this film is that it's fuck the incels. It's Jason turning around and going, so all those cocks that were like, girls can't be Ghostbusters, girls aren't funny, girls
Here's
aren't
two
this.
Of them, and one of them's a child.
Yeah, meet the children that are going to save your fucking franchise. There you go, have that.
Mm-hmm.
And not only do they do it, they knock it out the fucking park
by purely
inspiring, like you've just said, the Spielberg movies of our childhood, E.T., Goonies, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, all these films that made us feel wondrous.
Yep.
The world is huge and there's adventure at every corner. It doesn't matter that I live in a small town.
Mm-hmm.
There is wonder and adventure abound. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, McKenna Grace nails it. She absolutely fucking
nails it. Mate, she's insanely good. But they give that to modern day children. They give that to... It's a family film that gifts that in 2021. Are you fucking joking?
Yeah.
Who's doing that? No one.
But
no
I think that's why it works as a Ghostbusters sequel, because it has its unique own voice.
Yeah. And that voice is fucking screaming, anyone and everyone can be a fucking Ghostbuster.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you. It's mint.
I like it. I find the Harold Ramis stuff a bit odd.
Okay.
Because for the avoidance of spoilers, we've already given you the tag, go fuck yourselves. But at the end of the movie, Harold Ramis appears via CGI, even though he was dead when this was made.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel like, you know when they release an album after someone's died?
Yes.
I always find that really troubling, because I'm like, the reason that we don't hear those songs when they were alive is because they fucking hated those songs, right?
Yeah, they didn't want them out.
I can imagine just Bob Marley being like, not that one, not that fucking song. I despise that song.
Oh, God, I called it I Love Money. God, right. I hate it. No, just get it off my album. Yeah. No.
No Woman, No Cry seems really misogynistic in 2020. Why are we re-releasing it?
Yeah, let's not remaster it again, eh? I would agree with you. I fully understand where you're coming from. I do.
Right.
I see it as quite problematic.
Because I've not gone into the research side. I've just seen a dead man in CGI and gone.
Oh, my God. Right, let's not... I'm going to try with this one, right?
All right. Is it deep?
So in my research, I was like, I need to focus on it because I can't just go, it was a man in a green morph suit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, fair.
Yeah. So I did some proper digging, and the points that I was looking up specifically is I was working to three questions.
Mm-hmm.
a fitting apology to Harold Ramis for not making this triumphant return to Ghostbusters sooner.
Right.
Would this have been the same film without the emotional investment? And can you name me a more fitting send-off to anyone else ever in history?
Mussolini, when they hung him from a lamppost.
Well deserved. I stand corrected. Right. Can you name me six more people? I've put in brackets here, no Hunter S. Thompson, because he has the all-time best send-off ever. Being shot out of a cannon of a closed fist.
I'm not going to name another six. That's kind of reminiscent of like, oh, you like women? Name every woman.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to do. Because I'm gonna get my points across and I'm going to try and do it without crying.
Okay.
Right. So the Harold Ramis goodbye with the OG Ghostbusters and the family is literally fucking heartbreaking. And it does not get any easier when you start to research it.
Right. Okay. How come?
I'm going to do two bits here, bud. I might need your help with the second bit.
Right, okay.
But I'm going to do... might need your help with the first bit.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to try. We're going to start in the Ghostbusters universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's their characters. It's Egon Spengler's goodbye, right?
Yeah.
So Egon Spengler sacrificed a life with family and friends. He sacrificed his career. He sacrificed love. Gave it all up to protect his family, friends, and the ones he loves.
Right.
Even when no one believed in him.
Yeah, no one did. No one does. He just lives in that house by himself.
By himself, standing guard.
It was a lonely decade for a Ghostbuster.
It is the worst thing that I can imagine, but he believed so fervently that he was doing the right thing for those people that he did it regardless, right?
Yeah.
He's the only man that was keeping Gozer at bay so that everyone could...
Yeah. Yeah. Just there with his cup noodle meal for one, thinking about his daughter, hating him.
He was the only person...
Yeah.
keeping evil at bay.
Yeah.
So that every single person that knew him and knew of him could wake up continuously thinking that he was a piece of shit.
Yeah.
He didn't... He did this with no anger... with no resentment. He followed the science and did what was needed.
Do you think he missed Janine?
One sec, shut the fuck up.
Do you think he thought back to those moments with Janine Melnitz?
You're a cunt for this. You said you were going to help me. Okay. This isn't helping, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Because he's seen the other ones on TV doing really well with their careers, right? And
yeah, he knew all about them. That's the worst thing about it. So the moment that the friends and the family... all get to say their goodbyes.
Because they'd stop calling.
It's such a beautiful touch, right?
Mm.
Oh, because they recognize all the work that's gone into it and the sacrifice that was made. Fuck you, man.
It's also that bit because Phoebe rings Dan Aykroyd's character Ray to get information.
He says Egon Spengler can go to hell.
He can burn in hell for all I care.
Yeah.
And they were such good friends in Ghostbusters 1, and it's deteriorated to a point where...
Yeah. So it's a beautiful touch that they get to offer their apologies and go, you know what, fuck, we didn't understand what was happening at the time. We just assumed the worst, and then you ran with it. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a lovely goodbye. And then I've put in my notes here, cue tears and Rob bullying me, which has happened. This is good.
Yeah.
We're on track. We're back in. Just give me one moment. Right. Now, this bit I'm definitely going to need your help with because I thought I'd be all right on the first bit and struggle on this bit. Okay. Anyway, outside of the film.
Right.
In our timeline, in the real world, in this universe.
In the real universe.
In the real universe. Bill Murray and Harold Ramis hadn't spoken in about 20 years, right? They had a big fallout on 1993's Groundhog Day, which Ramis directed and Murray starred in.
I forget he directed Groundhog Day.
Yeah, he was an insanely talented guy, man.
Yeah.
A few months before his death in 2014, Murray and Ramis would meet up and make friends.
Right.
I'm going to have to pass this to you, buddy. Yeah, go.
Okay, a few months before Harold Ramis' untimely death in 2014, Murray and Ramis would meet up and rekindle their friendship. Apparently, Harold couldn't talk much, but they'd sit and reminisce about the good old days, probably in silence, just looking at each other, knowing that They've wasted 20 stuff. Years of their friendship.
Stop adding shit. Just come on.
So now the apology there has a whole new meaning and a whole new weight, because Winston says he should have called more. And fuck me, buddy, as we get older, isn't that something we can all relate to? Someone we love passes, and there's always a little feeling of, I wish I could just one more time, which brings in a whole other element of heavy feels. The main point is, though, without this acknowledgement to Harold, I feel this film would have been a cheap, meaningless rehash to try and keep the Ghostbuster flame fanned long enough to drag another Ghostbusters film, to drag another dollar out of the once sacred franchise. This film would have lost all relevance for Ben completely. Sure, it would still be fun, new Ghostbusters film that isn't anywhere near as good as the original, so he'd just watch the original. But with this gorgeous, family-orientated story based around giving a send-off to the Ghostbuster that wouldn't live to see Ghostbusters 3. And thankfully, 2016's attempted reboot that he was always in for. Cue tears. Oh, buddy. That's...
Dude. Hard.
There's a couple things that strike me about this film for you, right? That this is your comfort film. And
it is one of my fucking all-time comfort films. It just releases the emotional tap.
Ghostbusters 1 is, you know, when there's shouting going on downstairs, you go upstairs, you put Ghostbusters 1 on and you turn the volume up and everything's okay. So to have that big long gap, to have it come back with the pull fake version and have it not be anything that we wanted would have been, you know, disappointing. But nonetheless, this one comes along and it unfortunately has to reflect the reality that they did not stay friends and that they left it too late to really do anything about that. To have your comfort film carry that weight, I think they've done a fantastic job. But it is just a very sad thing for someone like yourself to know that there could have been more if they'd buried the hatchet.
Yeah. I think it's the whole abandonment thing that comes into play as well. You know, at the very end, Callie, who believes that she was abandoned as a kid, finds out that she wasn't.
Yeah. I think also on the other level, you've got Egon there who's doing the work while everyone else who could also be doing the work is like, nah, you're fine.
Yeah, but it's just...
He's doing the work of all four Ghostbusters.
Also the fact that he was...
And getting on with it because it needs to be done. Do you know what I mean? It needs to be done. Someone's got to do it.
Yeah.
Looks around to see if his mates and, you know, his family are there to help.
No.
And they're like, nah, fuck you, burn in hell.
He just steps up to the plate and does it. Sees something that he's doing to protect those around him and just does it. Yeah. Without question, sacrifices everything.
You're okay, buddy. You're right, buddy.
Yeah, I'm there.
I get the context more now.
Okay.
But my question is...
Sure.
Like, I'm Harold Ramis' daughter, right?
Sure.
I get that he had mates that he didn't speak to for 20 years, and now they've got my dad on screen, and I'm like, motherfucker, you weren't even there for 20 years. How come you get to do this?
How do we feel about the use of Harold Ramis after his death in this film?
Yeah, that's kind of my thing. It's like, I get that from the Ghostbusters perspective, I might be his daughter and be like, well, Bill Murray, lovely for you, buddy, that you got to bury the hatchet with my dad after having a hatchet in the first place. I've never fucking touched a hatchet.
Got you.
And there you are, raiding his fucking the family photo album to make Ghost Daddy happen, and it's a bit fucking weird. That's the thing I think about with these posthumous things, is like, people have got daughters, people have got wives, people have got...
Yeah. Okay, well, first off, I love the fact that Harold Ramis is in this. I love the fact that they recreated him in the way that they did. He was silent throughout the whole film. They didn't ruin it with any forced dialogue. It was all... It was all for Harold.
Yep.
And they reached out to Harold's daughter, who gave a blessing for this all to happen. She visited set a few times.
Okay.
She got to wear Harold's proton pack.
Okay, that's kind of cool. That's cool as fuck.
Plus, he gets his Ghostbusters 3, whether he's in it, whether he's like physically there or not. Fuck me. Fuck, man. I need you again.
All right. Okay. Look at it this way. Okay. Here's what we're going to do, right?
Yeah.
It's a respectful, passionate homage. If the family's involved, I'm down for it. You know, it's not someone like pulling your dead relative out of the coffin and being like, ha ha! We've made millions, right? Okay, I'm going to cheer you up.
Okay, go, go, go.
You had your chips pissed on with Ghostbusters 2016.
Yeah.
This is not that. How does it feel to have Ghostbusters back, buddy? You can have your plastic lunchbox again, wear it with pride.
Dude, it's the best thing about it is, right, it's not just a fucking toy advert. There's elements of it in there. Like the tiny Stay Puft things, they don't really serve a purpose. They're cute, but they get way too
How
much screen time.
How dare you?
Yeah, they don't really do much.
They're incredible.
They're awesome. Like, they are super fun. I'm not being like a negative Nelly here. They are super fun. I just think they get a bit too much screen time for bringing very little to the story. The original Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
I disagree.
Huge, ominous, scary thing in the face of this chubby, happy.
Right. But here's the thing. You can have those light comedy moments.
Yep.
Now, you can either give those light comedy moments to an army of dialogue-less, visual gag, Stay Puft Marshmallow Men.
Sure.
Or your main cast has to do them.
Yes.
They're a fucking key to this movie because the cast can stay serious, scared, deal with it. They can be dealing with their shit, getting serious shit done.
What they're
not doing is what 2016 or like contemporary Marvel does, where it's like,
right.
Oh my God, that's the personification of death itself. Right? Wink at camera.
That they're keeping all the serious, real human stuff for the, with real, the real humans. Actors.
But you need that levity, so you've got little Stay Puft dudes. Without the Stay Puft dudes, your characters have to do that shit. And it completely breaks the film.
Or it's a very fucking dramatic, dark film that's all of a sudden about, wow, okay. Right.
So I
rate
them.
You just fucking changed my entire opinion on that. Well done, sir. Fuck. I was dead set in this yesterday, man. I was like, fuck them. They're fun, but fuck them. But honestly, yeah, they're mint.
They're what allow the other characters to be scared or sad or serious.
Fuck, that's a great point.
Because,
man,
otherwise, it just turns into fucking Schindler's List. And you're just like,
yeah. I was abandoned by daddy. Whoops, right. No, I wasn't. Everyone cry.
Fuck me.
All right, yeah, fair.
But yeah, it's back, right? Ghostbusters is back.
It is.
For me, it goes Ghostbusters 1, mm-hmm. and then very, very close behind it, Ghostbusters Afterlife. And then some way down, Ghostbusters 2.
I'll agree. It's Ghostbusters 1, and then very, very close behind is this film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I went into the cinema with this with zero hopes. I went in with no expectation whatsoever. I was like, I'm going to go on opening night twice because it's Ghostbusters.
Yeah,
I feel like it's embedded in me now to a point of where I have to support a Ghostbusters film, right?
You do, yeah.
Whether I like it or not.
Yeah, yeah.
The franchise is the franchise. It's almost sacred to me.
Yeah, yeah. The Ghostbusters could release, like, the Ghostbusters of interest.
Yes.
And it could just be...
Yes.
It could be the Ghostbusters going around, like, an internment camp, zapping ghosts of wrongfully murdered people, and you'd be like, I have to see it, Rob.
Cliff Richard could go on tour and say, I have four holograms of the original Ghostbusters fighting a hologram Slimer in the audience at all times, and I would listen to every fucking song to make sure that I'm singing along front row.
It is a miracle that there is no Nazi memorabilia that also looks a bit Ghostbusters-y, because you would be arrested.
Yeah, immediately. The amount of shit that I'd have confiscated would be insane. It's bad, man. But so I went into the cinema with zero expectations. I was waiting to be disappointed the entire time it started, and I was like, oh, okay, so the score mm-hmm. is very reminiscent of the original. It's very playful, it's very bouncy. Yep. We've got the theremin, we've got the creepy piano,
but I think the score is what gave me the Spielberg vibe.
Yes,
it's such a Spielberg-y score. It's not a Ghostbuster. There's no rap in this.
No, it's fun and friendly, and it's still ominous and quite scary, but it's done in a playful way, as if to be sort of like, oh, you know something's here.
Uh-huh.
You know what's coming, and it's nice. It's like a little sort of, that's the little like jab in the ribs, like, hey, buddy, you want to see something cool? But this film had me fucking smiling, man. Like, it, almost immediately, I was like, I was cracking a smile, and I was like, holy shit, am I enjoying this?
Mm-hmm.
And then I started chuckling. And I was having a few giggles here and there, and I found myself fucking lost in the moment completely. Could just enveloped in this film right up until the moment it fucking ripped my beating heart out of my chest, broke it into a million pieces. But it then put me back together with a million and one pieces because I feel like it gifted me something that I didn't know that I needed. And then when I had it, I was like, oh my fucking God, this makes me feel complete. It was like a pure nostalgia trip. It was a tearjerker, but it felt weirdly healing to have that experience time and time again. I did it twice on opening day, and I think I did this maybe 6 or 7 times in the theater. I fucking loved every second of it.
Jesus Christ.
I bawled my eyes out in public on my own in the cinema, in packed screens, because COVID was just over. Everyone wanted to get back out of the house. Ghostbusters was out.
Yeah.
I was sitting next to strangers, uncontrollably sobbing loudly in a fucking cinema.
Literally. I love the fact that there will have been people watching Ghostbusters Afterlife thinking that they were sat next to somebody who just lost someone to COVID.
Yes.
They're like, this poor man, he's in the cinema by himself because he's what? He's in his mid-30s.
Oh, God. Can you imagine,
he's
like...
He's probably lost his wife and he had tickets to see this and he's just sat there by himself.
The one empty chair next to me on that one screen, and then everyone's like, oh my God, he's bought 2 tickets for the person that he's lost. And I'm like, no, it's Egon. Egon's here with me. Fuck you.
Speaking of ghosts, right, I want to get into how Satan names demons.
Yeah, what is this? This is a new note and I'm super excited for it. Come on.
Right, I feel like he obviously did not do it all in one day.
Okay.
It feels like this is a list of names that he was on a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
It was late. He was drunk. He was like, right.
He wakes up hungover as fuck.
Goza and Zool are like the party night, right?
Oh,
he's
right.
He's doing lines. He's like,
he's writing them on napkins at the bar.
Right, yeah. Goza. Goza's a great name. He wakes up hungover and some little sub demon comes over and goes, we need a couple more names. And he's just like, oh.
You've named 6. There is 154.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
What the fuck
are
we doing?
And at a certain point, he just goes, oh, fucking Vince Clortho.
Yep.
And they're like, that's not a name. And he's like, Barbara Miller. Like, Vince Clortho is not a demon name, Ben.
How do you think this went, Rob? Let's you be Satan. Ready?
Oh, fuck.
Excuse me, Master. You've only named 6 demons.
Fuck you.
You went out on the cocaine. I said cocaine was a bad idea. But you did it anyway.
Fuck you.
Don't fuck. Don't fuck me. That's not until 3 p.m. I know, but that's at 3. I need 6 more names, Master.
Okay.
I have my pen. What do we do?
Fucking Vince. One's called Vince.
Why? Vince. What? Okay.
Vince. Just fucking what? Give him a surname. He's the only demon with a surname.
Okay. Smith?
Clortho's a surname. Vince Clortho.
Vince Clortho.
That's exactly how it would have gone. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sound, all right.
It's not a one-night deal, is what I'm saying. There's this marked shift.
Yeah, definitely. There's a hangover, there's a cocaine blur, and there's a lot of that one guy at the bar being like, mate, we're going to open our own bar. It's going to be sick.
We're going to
call it Goza. Why? Because you are Goz. I don't know what this means, buddy, but I'm in for it. Let's open a fucking bar.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
you're terrifying. You're massive and red. Let's do something about it.
100%. I feel like every time they say Vince Clortho in this movie, I'm just like, it snaps me out a little bit because at a certain point, I have to think of what we just did, which is Satan there going, just running out of ideas, just going, Stephen Fruit. There's a demon called Stephen Fruit.
It's it's like the kid in Monkey Man when he calls himself Bobby and he just reads it off the nearest bleach bottle.
Yeah.
No, I got you.
Clortho is probably a brand of detergent.
1000%. 1000%. So come on then, what are you rating it?
This is a fat 10, mate. This is a fat 10. I tell you why. I tell you why now.
Tell me for why there, Rob.
Right. I'm not the biggest Ghostbusters guy.
Okay.
And this is not an incredible film. By the terms of, like, it's not an Oscar. It's not my thing, right?
It's not.
It's a light, fun family comedy. The reason it's a perfect 10 is because the way I judge films, we've gone over this again. What did the film set out to do? What did Act 1 say? This is what the end result will be. And did it smash it? Yes, it set out to be a fun, light family adventure. It fucking smashes that and really rapidly corrects a ship that was way off course, all in one movie. But the reason I love this film, even though it's not normally the sort of thing I'll give a fat 10, is because I can sit and watch this film, and as long as there's a space next to me, I can imagine a little ghost Ben having a laugh and a cry next to me, and I can go, I can feel how much you love this film from one watch.
Oh God,
and it
love
just
that
makes
so
me
much.
Go, oh, this is fucking great for Ben. But it's so great for you that I've got to give it a fat 10. How could I give it anything less?
I love that, mate. I love that. Thank you. That dude, this is why I love you. You know what I mean?
I love you too, buddy.
Thanks, man. Yeah. I'm going to give this a 9.5.
Fuck off.
Just a 9.5. Hear me out though. It's good reason, right? Ghostbusters to me, the original Ghostbusters is the perfect film, right?
Okay.
It's a perfect film. In 50 years' time, there are going to be colleges and they're going to be teaching film studies.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have like a course covering comedy, right?
Mm-hmm.
They will be covering Ghostbusters 1984. It's going to happen.
Yep.
It is 1000% going to be part of the syllabus. And it's because it's so incredibly well written that it's impossible to ignore. You don't have to be a Ghostbusters fan to enjoy it. It's fucking incredible. It's perfect. Yep. I wouldn't change a thing about it.
Yep.
I'm giving this a 9.5 because, again, I change less about it now because one of the things that I would change about it is less of the tiny Stay Puft marshmallows, but you've changed my mind on that, so I have to reassess. I was going to give it a 9, but now it's a 9.5. I don't think it's as cleverly written or as biting as the first one because I don't feel like I'm in on the joke as much. I feel like the joke is in front of me and I can still enjoy it to the same degree, but I don't feel like it's as mine.
Yeah, whereas I prefer that. I prefer the more naturalistic thing. So that's a personal preference thing. Fair 100%. Enough. And if you've not got that, then I can see why it's not a Ghostbusters film. It's a Spielberg movie, and that's less of the
there
thing you,
you
like. Yeah, yeah. Okay,
and this whole film is Jason Reitman showing his father, not telling him, showing his father how much him and his work and his legacy mean to him to the point of being as faithful as he was, every possible opportunity, giving little nods to his father's previous work. There's this sign on the cinema in Somerville has Cannibal Girls on it, which is Ivan Reitman's first film from the 70s. It's also on the cinema billing in Ghostbusters 2, Cannibal Girls.
Nice.
There's tons of little nods like that. It's a painfully delicate homage to the original series. It's made for Ghostbusters fans by the Ghostbusters fan, and I couldn't be fucking happier that it exists. The Harold Ramis send-off is pure. It's incredibly well executed. It's heartbreakingly beautiful on so many levels. Oozes nothing but respect and dignity, and it just gifts this wonderful person the Ghostbusters 3 that he will never be able to be in physically. And for that, 9.5, I fucking love it. I'm setting myself off. We need to do something else.
Do you want to play a game?
Yes, I do.
Right. Simple one. Paul Rudd casting choice, true or false?
Ooh. Okay,
true or false?
Yes.
Paul Rudd.
True.
Was nearly cast. You're right. He exists. Yeah.
He does. Mint. 1 point to me.
Paul Rudd was nearly cast in the Ben Affleck role in the 1990-something film Armageddon.
Ooh. I don't know how I feel about if that would have come to fruition, but I'm going to say true.
False, I'm afraid. False.
Fuck.
I started you off with a false.
Yeah, I'm glad it's false.
For movie fans out there, if you ever get a chance, if you're going to rewatch Armageddon, it's not that good a film. What you can do instead is rewatch the Ben Affleck director's commentary.
Please do. It's
where
incredible.
He is just slating the film for 2 hours and has to get asked to leave.
It's fucking incredible. It's actually incredible.
Peak of his alcoholism. It's so fucking good.
It's amazing. His main question, why are we teaching drillers how to be astronauts? Wouldn't it be easier to just teach astronauts how to use a drill? Shut the fuck up, Ben.
True or false? Paul Rudd was nearly cast in, but did not get the role of Jack in Titanic.
But instead of Leo?
Yeah.
Fuck, I want to see that film so bad. I'm going to say true.
Yeah, it's true.
Yes, please. Yeah.
Do you want to know why he didn't get the role?
Why?
I mean, obviously because he's Paul Rudd. I think he was a poor fit for the role either way.
Absolutely not. But he would have made it so much better.
He puts it down to he's a massive Titanic nerd. So he went into the audition and started talking about like incredibly nerdy particulars of the boat. Who built it? When the shipyard was founded? The kind what of steel the they used? And they're like, none of that is important. It's lovely that you brought it. But it's just, that's not the film we're making.
That's fucking incredible. That's actually incredible.
True or false?
Okay.
Paul Rudd was nearly cast as Rachel Weisz's brother in The Mummy.
Rachel Weisz's brother?
The grave robber / archaeologist played by John Hannah.
Oh. False?
I mean, sadly, it is false, but he would have been mint in that role.
He would have been amazing in that role. What the fuck?
And like, John Hannah does fuck all now. I mean, I love John Hannah. I was a massive incredible John Hannah fan, and I'm annoyed that I don't get to see more John Hannah and stuff. And that annoyance has made me go, fuck it, recast him.
Get Paul Rudd in.
Get Paul Rudd in. If Paul Rudd had been in that film, I could still enjoy that actor. Whereas John Hannah, I don't know what he's done, but he's clearly pissed someone off and he's not in stuff anymore. And now I wish he was in nothing because I feel like I had something really good and it's been taken away from me. Fuck you, John Hannah. Also love you, John Hannah.
There you go.
Final one.
Go on.
Paul Rudd was nearly in The Hangover.
As who? Zach Galifianakis? If you replace Zach Galifianakis with Paul Rudd, that's a wildly different film. I want to see it. I'd probably invest in the Hangover trilogy if it was Bradley Cooper and Paul Rudd. That's Wet Hot American Summer comedy all over.
Right, because they were going to do it as a younger brother, like a young brother who was just young. And when you look at the Zach Galifianakis character, if he's like 19, his character isn't kooky at all. His character is just a 19-year-old man. It's the fact he's 40.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Behaving a 19-year-old that it suddenly becomes so much funnier.
Yeah, Zach Galifianakis is a master of his craft. He's incredible. I just think that, like, I don't know, Paul Rudd and Bradley Cooper, there's magic there. Do you know what I mean?
There
it's
is
Wet
magic,
Hot American Summer. That's my bias.
The other person they approached was Jake Gyllenhaal.
No.
I think that would have been so upsetting. That would have been unsettling. The only way that would have worked is if it was Jake Gyllenhaal. The only way that would have worked is if it was Jake Gyllenhaal's character in Nightcrawler. If they're just trying to have a stag party.
Oh my days! He's the cinematographer for the stag party. That would have been fucking amazing. Okay, I'm back invested. Let's get him on board. Have we got time for Connacht Corner?
I think
we
do.
Let me do that again because none of those were words. Have we got time for Comment Corner?
I think we do. Yeah, I think we do.
Okay. I have got a fucking mint one to come out of the gate strong. You ready for this?
I mean, yeah, because I got fucking nothing. So whilst you do that, let me just quickly panic find.
You do that. This is from Andy Bailey. Mm-hmm. He is very near and dear to my heart. I love him to pieces. He messaged me privately and said, Rob needs to get out. And I put, what do you mean? And he put, I'd change Citizen Kane. I'd fucking beat it with a toboggan. Fuck off.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this sounds like one of your friends for sure. Because,
because
like wrong people tend to congregate in groups.
He's come back to this already, mate. And before he critiques my taste, I studied that film from an academic level. Still shit. The cinematography, yeah, it's fine. Everything else, wank.
I mean, I don't know why you'd tell on yourself like that. Just say, I kind of watched half of it and it wasn't for me. Don't go, I studied it and I'm this still this wrong.
At an academic level, studied it. In film studies, he studied it. And then also, just to finish it off, I was like, yeah, I got a little bit bored of Citizen Kane. I get a little bit bored of Citizen Kane every attempt to watch it, which I do. It's a good film, but, you know, it's not really my cup of tea. And then he put, because, bro, it's a film for toffs and Murphys students to bask in whilst they huff their own farts.
Wow. Okay, so 50% of our audience right now. Please get in touch. everymovieeveruk@gmail.com.
Let us know what you're thinking.
Let's get a back and forth going.
Are we on Team Bailey or are we on Team Rob? What are we saying?
Everymovieeverpodcast.com. There's plenty of contact details there. Yeah.
Join the Discord. Let us know what's going on in there.
Join the Discord, yeah. Or email us at everymovieeveruk@gmail.com. Because Andy Bailey says Citizen Kane is for toffs, twats, and people who've got bad taste in film.
Yeah.
I got people in my corner, man. I know there'll be at least one email.
You've not seen Bailey. He's like the fucking Hulk, man.
He will snap me. Like, it's not a fist fight. Ben, I don't win fights against my own self. Right?
Have you ever?
I don't have willpower. Do you know what
same.
I mean?
Right? Whoa. A real
I can't get to bed on
uttered.
Time, Ben. 7 p.m., I go, I'm going to be asleep by 9:30. And by 2 in the morning, I'm like, fuck, lost again. All right.
Fuck, maybe I should get off Reddit. But also, right. Better just check the subreddit that covers
Kendrick Lamar. Better refresh that again.
Yeah. Keep refreshing.
Something might happen in the last 2 minutes. Yeah. I want to address, we covered Monkey Man last week and we put up a sort of appeal for information about Narendra Modi. And these are all what people said. Max Power 742 said the villain in this movie has many similarities with the current president. That being said, the movie is outstanding. The Monkey Man makes John Wick look like the Gimp from Pulp Fiction. Modi came out of the Nazi-affiliated RSS. His party is the BJP, which is the political wing of the RSS. They're extremely Islamophobic.
I'm not laughing at what you're saying, because what you're saying is horrendous stuff. Yeah. But you've just brushed past one of the greatest things I've ever heard anyone say.
I'm trying to get the serious stuff out while you're still laughing. Modi has taken over India and radicalized and divided the nation. He's our prime minister and he belongs to the far right party. He was banned from traveling to the USA until 2014. People saying that there's footage of like hideous violence. Pushed a lot of millionaires to become billionaires through his dirty politics, which in turn these corporates bought almost all of the media and reporting channels, which now only speaks about how well he is doing. Except he is not. He's spreading hate and silencing people who raise their voice. I'm even scared to post this comment, but still believe one day we'll be free. For that one day, I post this. And I won't read their username because it seems out of the spirit.
To be fair. Thank you for that comment, because when we get educated from people who are actually living in the situation and can give us first-hand experience with sincerity and a very sort of level-headed answer like that, it's very informative, it's very nice. There's a lot of stuff online that you can read and it's hard to know what to trust, but stuff like that helps. Thank you for the education. Thank you for reaching out and fucking dude.
That was Comment Corner, and if you would like to get in touch, I suggest you do, because people are literally risking oppression from their totalitarian regimes in order to get in touch with us. So what's your fucking excuse? Find us on Instagram or TikTok.
Fuck me. Again. Left turn. Fucking hell. All
right. Just saying, that's commitment that I've not seen from a listener yet. Do you know what I mean?
Dude, same. Yeah, that's like... That's
when that
like
fella's fucking... on his knees with a gun to the back of his head... He'll go,
wow.
Fucking love that podcast.
Well, just one more episode? Just one more episode?
Yeah.
About right. Have you heard this jingle? Unfortunately, guys, that's all the time we have for this week. But we shall be back next week with...
Secret.
Okay, we're back with a mystery next week, apparently.
No. Look, all I'm saying is, and I need everyone to start wild speculation on this.
Okay.
We're the Every Movie Ever podcast. We cover every film in a franchise.
We do.
Now, some franchises we have covered have received updates.
Ooh.
So we are now not covering every movie, are we? Because there's more fucking movies.
We missed a couple, yeah.
There's a couple of
franchises out there that need a little bit of a refresh, a little bit of spit and polish.
Yeah, they need a new
It's one of them.
Okay.
Speculate away, motherfuckers.
We love you all dearly. Thank you so fucking much for hanging out with us this week. It genuinely means the world to us.
It really, really, really does. Now Ben's going to give you a little Monday motivation to thank you for spending time with us this week, especially at the start of your week. He's going to give you a little pep talk, little zen moment, wrapping up the themes and thoughts of this movie, while I am going to cosplay a society and just tell you to consume.
I've got 2 points, and they're both lengthy, so Rob, deeper breath. Come on, buddy. Egon Spengler. Egon Spengler sacrificed his entire life to protect those that he loves. Everyone fucking despised him, and he still did the right thing no matter what, because it benefited them. It was actions over words, and he fucking took the weight of it with no resentment, no anger, no nothing. That is an insanely, insanely powerful, loving thing to do. If you are ever in a position to be able to offer that kind of love towards the people that you care about, I say fucking snap it up, man. Snap it up. Just, I don't know, just fucking phone those around you that you know and love and just tell them that you fucking love them.
Fucking hell, Ben.
That's point number one. Point number two.